We have reached Volodya Volkov. He is the project director of Ukrainian Jewish Heritage. Volodya, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Okay,
glad to be with you.
And thank you so much for joining us. I know it's late in Ukraine right now. What time is it there?
Oh, it's 10 p.m.
10 p.m., and you've got a little one, so you're going to want to be wanting to get to bed. So tell us, you're living in Lviv, and you were the one, actually, you really lit a fire under me because I was going to just kind of let the mainstream media take care of this. But you were the one, you sent me a very brief email saying, have a look at this. And it was absolutely, it was appalling, and I thought, well, I can't just sit back. I have to find out a little bit more and share it with our listeners. Mm-hmm. So in Lviv, now how far are you from Kyiv?
Well, it's about 600 kilometers.
Okay, so you're quite a distance, but there are things going on, protests in Lviv now?
Well, definitely. Lviv was actually one of the first cities that started Euromaidans, or, you know, these protests against the President Yanukovych's refusal to sign the association agreement with the European Union.
Right.
And it all started in Lviv on November 21st to 22nd. And it started with 30 students. And today we are having protests that reach up to 30, 40,000 people. So Lviv is definitely one of the most active. The level of participation is extremely high. And it's, I think it's an inspiration to the entire country that you know, keeps this this revolution going forward.
So where are the people demonstrating in Lviv?
Well, it's very symbolic. People chose to demonstrate right next to the monument to Taras Shevchenko.
Hmm.
You know, someone who always wanted to have to see Ukraine free from, you know, outside outside pressure.
Uh huh.
It actually was also very symbolic that when students first came to protest in Lviv, there was a court decision to prohibit gatherings in several key places in Lviv. But it was such a fortunate coincidence that when the court passed its decision, there was a mistake in the address. And people didn't apply to the place next to Taras Shevchenko monument.
Well, that was fortuitous.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so people had the full right to do it. And then, of course, also our municipal administration are very supportive, and the local police and the special forces are also supporting the protesters. And Berkut, you know, there was a very dramatic, violent crackdown at the protesters by Berkut forces in Kyiv. But Lviv Berkut said they were not to follow the orders to crack down at the protesters in Lviv.
Wow. So the police in Ukraine, or in Lviv, that Western Ukraine, mm-hmm. they're defying orders from their bosses to crack down protesters.
No, they're not defying, but they just made the statement that they are not going to do it, and they want everybody to follow the rule of law and be peaceful. And if everybody is peaceful, they're not going to do any such thing, so that people can be quite sure about it and have a peace of mind. And Lviv is very active in supporting what is happening in Kyiv right now. From what I know from the latest news among protesters is that every day for the last 2 to 3 days there are 2,000 people leaving from Kyiv from Lviv to Kyiv to support the rally in Kyiv.
Sorry, how many?
2,000 people that are going to Kyiv every day.
Wow. And these are people who just leave their jobs, leave their classes, their classrooms?
Definitely students are leaving their classrooms, sacrificing a lot. They were the major force, and they still are behind these protests. They're definitely sacrificing their time, and some of them perhaps they're great because they will have a lot of makeup work to do,
mm-hmm.
but that is not stopping them. And the first week from November 21st until the Bloody Saturday, as it has become known, on November 30th, the majority of the protesters, they were students and young people. But now, after this, after the violence, now the protesters are different in their age. You know, it's the protesters are students, adults, people in retirement. Everybody is now, united by this idea. And also, I would say that this, as it has become dubbed the European Revolution, it has had a very strong unifying effect on the country.
Something that probably was not anticipated by the authorities.
No, I think authorities, they miscalculated very bad. They thought that, people would just keep quiet and that they would maybe, there would be some discord between people and they would not find a common language. But it has been, the events have proved to be, for it to be otherwise. There are Lviv is, of course, Lviv, Ternopil, Ivano-Frankivsk, Lutsk. They're all having major protests, about 40,000 people. But in the west, they're also protests. In the east, there are also protests taking place, like in Donetsk, Vinnytsia, Zaporizhia, Luhansk even. And they have a participation of about 1,000 to 2,000 people.
Wow, in the east.
And even in Sevastopol, there are about 100 to 200 people who came out to protest.
Wow. So just for the benefit of listeners who are tuning in who are not familiar with Ukrainian geography, we are talking areas in the Crimea. And that is largely Russian-speaking area. When I was there, certainly back in 2008, there was very little Ukrainian spoken. As well, the eastern regions, and you're saying in Donetsk and Dnipropetrovsk and places like that, where there there has previously been the perception that they want to stick closer to Russia and they don't want to go west. You say they're protesting in favor of going to the European Union.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely it's not... it's general perception that people are oriented more towards Russia in the east, but it's the events are showing that it's not the case for everybody in the east, and there are lots of people who are coming out to state their support for the pro-European direction for Ukraine. So definitely, I would say it's a misperception now that most people want to go. Are pro-Russian in the East, and this European revolution is showing just that. There are some people that are undecided, of course, but most people, they are really supporting the European, the European direction, but also there's a lot of fear, of course, of, of going public with your, with your point of view.
Really? Still? In 2013, Ukrainians are still afraid to voice their opinion and their position on political matters. Yes?
Wow. Right now, at least, there still is a lot of fear in the east because those politicians, that those governors and some of the mayors. They are quite, they have this Soviet style of leadership, and they try to be very controlling. So I would definitely say that people, and they are afraid to lose their jobs and are afraid of any, even physical retaliation.
Wow. So this is what happened on Bloody Saturday. Can you tell us a little bit more about what transpired on Bloody Saturday? That was November 30th.
Well, the violence happened at about 4 a.m. on Saturday, very early in the morning, and there was before that, during the day on Friday, there were about 100 to 200 people in Kiev. Then most of the people went home, It was quite cold, but some small group, relatively small, stayed on Maidan Nezalezhnosti, the independent square in Kiev. And they were singing songs, just trying to stay warm, when the Berkut security forces showed up, and they said that they have an order to clear the area on Maidan Nezalezhnosti because the Kiev City Council wants to put a Christmas tree there. And so everybody has to clear out the area. They have to, you know, make preparations for the New Year's Eve. Well, they said we're not going anywhere because we have, you know, we want to basically express our disapproval of the government right now, and we are going to stay. That's our right. And so, and then the forces, the security forces, got quite violent with them, starting pushing them, you know, bullying, using, hitting them with sticks. And so on, and people started running. And so what was the worst part was that even the security forces, they attacked women and children, like students, and they would even start, hit people that were lying already on the ground, people that were running away, people that surrendered and said, look, I want to leave. They would hit even those. There was also a report that a pregnant woman got hit. And so those events, you know, if it were to happen maybe 10 years ago, the public the public reaction would have been different. But today, because we have so much technology, internet, social media, everyone has, you know, a smartphone, has a camera in his pocket, all of this got filmed very well. And everybody saw everything in detail. There was no way to hide this evidence, no way to go around it, you know. And that's why the public was just furious when they found out. They demanded the government, you know, to resign immediately. And so what I would this bloody Saturday, it really marked a transformation in the protests, and it turned. You know, the protests became a revolution, but also the protests in favor of the European integration, they also became a protest against the current government, you know, because it was never, the protests started before Viktor Yanukovych went to Vilnius to sign the deal, the EU deal, and they were never against the government, you know. They were just to say that we want to be in Europe. But after this clash in Kyiv, the protesters, clearly the priority for them became the resignation of the government.
Mm-hmm. And that's all. And now there was violence, there were beatings. There were so far, fortunately, no fatalities. No one has been killed yet.
No, fortunately, no one has been killed. And but the following day, December 1st, there were lots of provocations, you know. Mm. They were using a bulldozer. There was a group of radical-minded people that started using a Molotov cocktail, throwing them at the police forces and the security forces, you know, blowing up some homemade, bombs, I would say. So they were trying to discredit basically the entire protest movement and give a pretext, give a reason for the authorities so they could use force. And also some of the people they disappeared, and some people are still missing. I would say 10 to 20 people. Some people got jailed. But after those provocations that happened on December 1st, you know, on the bulldozer events, after that demonstration, there were about 160 people that got injured, and 50 journalists that got beaten really hard.
Wow. Is there any way that we here in Canada can help you, Volodya?
Well, I guess it's really helpful for the demonstrators here in Lviv and throughout Ukraine, especially in Kyiv, when there are reports coming about the Euromaidans happening all over the world, like in you know, right in the United States, in Canada, you know, France, all over the world, there were small little Euromaidans taking place. And tonight I heard a report on social media that the highest skyscraper in Warsaw, in Poland, it got lit up in blue and yellow colors, the colors of the Ukrainian flag.
Oh, isn't that nice.
So they are supported with the Ukrainian people. So it's really great when there are small events taking place across across the world, especially in the Canadian diaspora, which is such a, you know, such a always a source of inspiration for the Ukrainian people here in Ukraine. And it's also there are also you know, there are also ways to donate money to the protesters. There are various bank accounts for people use the money to buy food, warm clothes, and medicine. Those are the three most important things that they buy.
Is there a Facebook site where people are just coming into this? They're just hearing about this for the first time and want to get more information. Is there? Would you recommend? I know there are lots of Facebook sites and there's Twitter, but can you recommend a good place for somebody in the diaspora in North America to go and find more information and get involved if they want to?
It's hard for me to say whether there is a center you could go to in the diaspora. For example, if you go on Twitter, you could type Euromaidan, and you'll find one or two accounts, Twitter accounts, that are called Euromaidan.
Okay.
Euromaidan.
Mm-hmm.
And they once in a while, I would say, they publish information about the bank accounts where the money could go. Also, a good way is to, for example, go to a website of a political party, the opposition political party, try to get in touch with their managers and ask them where you should go to give help. Also, you could go to Hromadske TV. Hromadske.tv, website. They have a website,
mm-hmm.
And they would know the contact persons who could, give you directions on how to give help.
Okay, and the Hromadske TV, that's the new public broadcasting channel. So thank you so much,
yep.
Volodya. We've been speaking with Volodya Volkov of Lviv, Ukraine. He's a project manager of our Ukrainian Jewish Heritage feature. And we'll be praying for you and keeping our fingers crossed. And hope, and there will be this information. I'll put the links and the information that you mentioned, Volodya, on the Nash Holos website and also on the CHLY Facebook page for people to get involved. Thank you so much for joining us, for staying up so late. I appreciate it. So, Dobranich, and all the best.
Дуже дякую, Dobranich. Слава Україні.
Слава Україні.